The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. And we're going to start with some more about American women from the AARP magazine. And this is from the article about Generations of Change. This one is entitled The Second Shift, Balancing Motherhood with Ambition. Mother is Geneva Senior, retired telecom specialist, mother of four, living in Hamden, Connecticut. Daughter is Darlene Winkler, former Wall Street executive and leadership volunteer, mother of three, living in Roseland, New Jersey. Granddaughter is Sage Winkler, accountant, Roseland, New Jersey. Geneva, 80. When I was the mother of four young children, my husband worked and provided for the family, but he never helped out with domestic chores. Child care and housework were things men did not do back then. I would cook before I left for work, and at night I would do the laundry and clean. I think it was even more difficult for women during my mother's generation. There were things she wanted to do in the world, but she wasn't allowed, either because she was a woman or because she was African American. It wasn't because she didn't have the ability. That was difficult for me to see. Maybe that's one of the reasons I always told my children to shoot for the stars. Darlene, who's 57. Not only has my mother encouraged me to live my dreams, but she has also offered hands-on family support. I was able to move up the corporate ladder and accept positions that required long hours and global travel because I knew my mother and my husband would be there to help look after our three girls. Sage, 26. Both my grandma and my mom have made me feel like I could do anything. They've never offered me advice other than go for it. Looking at their lives and what they have accomplished probably makes me push myself harder. Darlene, there has definitely been a significant improvement in career opportunities for women since my mother was in the workforce. But to be honest, the change has not progressed as far or as much for African-American women as it has for white women. Sage, I know that as a black woman, there will always be certain challenges for me, no matter what year it is. That said, I definitely think I have more opportunities than my mom, and she had more opportunities than her mom. The internet and social media have created a more reachable world with more possibilities. The next one is titled Sexual Harassment, Learning to Speak Out Against Abuse. Mother is Fran Bull, artist, gallery owner, professor of art, mother of three, lives in Brandon, Vermont. Daughter is Katie Bull, voice coach, jazz vocalist, composer, mother of two, from Ulster County, New York. Granddaughter, Hannah Jane Bull Pritchett, artist, graduate student in geographic information systems and technology, lives in Summit County, Colorado. Katie, 57. I believe each generation is having a different experience of the hashtag MeToo movement, and we have to listen to each other. I teach undergraduates, and I recognize how empowering it has been for young women to feel like they can talk about their experiences of harassment or assault and not be ashamed. And at the same time, it's a concern for me to see trial by the social media masses. I'm also the mother of a young man, so I know we need to make sure that when we're talking about freedom, that really what we're talking about is equality. We want to liberate women's voices by serving justice. Hannah Jane, 25. I have mixed views about it too, but they're different ones. I think it's incredible that many women have come forward to speak about their abuse, but I also think it has put pressure on the other women to go public, and it's a process, and I speak as someone who has been through it. Unfortunately, it took me many years to talk about it in any way. I have so much respect for people who are comfortable speaking about their experiences, but I also have as much respect for the people who are not there yet. Fran, 82. As a young woman, I accepted certain behaviors that women today are saying they won't put up with. I worked in the garment center in New York as a model, and oh God, the harassment there was every day. The whole idea of beauty, I think, is an area that has not been explored, except maybe by philosophy. I believe there's a fear of feminine beauty. It can make a young woman a target. Katie, my mom inspired me as an artist with her independence, passion, vision, and dedication to her art. I think she's a genius, and not just because she's my mom. Hannah Jane, growing up, I was surrounded by strong female energy in every corner of my life, my mother and my true grandmothers. I was raised in a household where my opinion mattered, and having a mother who is a vocal coach taught me how to use my voice to assert myself. Next, we have intellectual challenge, women who wanted more. Mother is Laura McKee, retired museum education specialist, volunteer museum director, mother of two, from Woodbridge, Virginia. Daughter is Deborah McKee, college science instructor, mother of three, Manassas, Virginia. Daughter is Karen McKee, educator, writer, publicist, and actor in Chicago. Laura is 84. When I went back to work in the early 70s, nobody else that I knew was a working mother. But I was just going so crazy staying at home, taking care of my kids. Karen, 56. We were some of the first latchkey kids in the neighborhood. She was a fantastic mom, but she said, "I've got a brain. I've got to keep my brain." She started at the Smithsonian when I was in second grade, and Deborah was in fifth grade, and it was fine. Mom always tells me that she felt guilty for leaving us with a babysitter, but we loved it because we got a degree of freedom. Laura, my husband Alan and I have been married for more than 6 decades. He has always been willing to let me do what I felt I needed to do. When I told him I wanted to go back to work after the kids were born, he said, "Fine, we'll figure out a way to take care of the children." Deborah, 59. Women with families are now in a kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't position. If you decide to stay home with your kids, assuming you are financially able to do so, some working mothers look down on you. If you decide instead to keep working, some who stay home will say that you are selfishly putting yourself first. Men are not faced with these choices. For that reason, I would say it is harder now than it was a generation ago, just because most mothers were not expected to have their own careers, so there was less pressure, even though there were also fewer choices. Laura, after I retired from the Smithsonian, I got involved with an effort to create a museum in a former prison in honor of women who were imprisoned and tortured there in the 1910s for demanding the right to vote. I eventually became the director, and the Lucy Burns Museum opened at the beginning of 2020. The most compelling thing for me about the suffragettes is the fact that these women were willing to die to get the vote. Literally. They went on hunger strikes with the understanding that they could die from not eating and that they would suffer horribly from being force-fed by their captors. And yet, they went ahead and did it. I mean, that kind of bravery is just beyond my comprehension. Karen, we have all volunteered for the museum in various ways, including my dad. Laura, he actually works for me now as a volunteer, giving tours of the museum to visitors. Deborah, I think his greatest contribution to the museum has been his constant support and assistance to my mom, both mentally and physically. He brags about her all the time. And finally, an immigrant's story, climbing the ladder of success. Mother is Isidra Hernandez, a stay-at-home mother of nine from Houston. Daughter is Dolores Villarreal, a stay-at-home mother of four from Richmond, Texas. Granddaughter is Annette Silva, TV producer, expecting her first child in Los Angeles. Doris, 59. In so many ways, I've had it easier than my mother. I was born here, so I grew up bilingual. She was born in Mexico and had to teach herself English. She got married at 15 and never finished high school. I graduated and did some college, and Annette has a college degree. Isidra, 90. I came to this country in my 20s, but I didn't become a citizen until 1980 because my husband didn't think it was important. The way I was raised, the man's word goes. So I waited patiently until he said, okay, let's do it. In the meantime, I worked on local campaigns, going door to door, supporting those candidates I believed in. When I finally cast my first vote, I felt like a giant. And I'm only 4'10". Annette, who's 31. I've heard that my grandpa used to tell my mom and his other kids, I want you to go to work in the big, tall building and have executives as your bosses. And I thought, well, I don't have an executive as a boss. I am the executive. I've surpassed the ceiling of opportunity that my grandparents could envision for their kids. Here I am, working in the tall building. And my next thought is, I want to own this tall building. Dolores, I used to doubt myself. How am I going to influence my girls to get educated, considering that I ended up getting married and dropping out of college? But they did finish. And now I'm almost 60, and I'm thinking it might be time for me to finish too. I want to learn about computers and programs. There's a little hole in my soul that says, I really want this, and why not? And now, from the Essential Retirement Guide, the ins and outs of retiring abroad. Is the expat lifestyle right for you? There are many reasons that retiring overseas is appealing at any age: the beaches, the cost of living, and the opportunities for adventure. The lower cost of living in many foreign countries may even mean that by moving abroad, you'll be able to stop working earlier. But before you pull up stakes and move across borders, make sure you've got all your ducks in a row. And of course, this is assuming that the COVID gets under control. Consider the cost of living. Many retirees gravitate to countries with lower costs of living in order to stretch their savings further. Spending less on things like food, bills, and transportation can enable you to enjoy a higher standing of living than you would back home, or make your money last longer in your new favorite place. The Economist's Cost of Living Survey, which is easily found online, can help you determine how a potential new home measures up. For a more detailed budget breakdown, consult websites catering to expats in the country of your choice. These sources can help you get a sense of how much your peers are spending on things like rent, travel, and health care. Before you start daydreaming about moving into an oceanfront villa, consider that some major expenses might be the same or even larger abroad. If you opt to live in a major tourist area, for example, you may find that rents and restaurants are quite pricey. You'll likely pay a premium price for foods and other products imported from the U.S. Regular currency conversion fees may erode your savings. And if you plan on making regular visits to see friends and family who still live in the U.S., make sure you have a hefty travel budget to cover the cost of airfare. Understand visa and other requirements. Every country has different visa requirements and rules about residency. Consult the U.S. State Department's website for specific information about your country of choice to ensure your relocation is meeting all the legal requirements. If your retirement plans include working or purchasing property abroad, make sure those options are available to you in your new home. local employment laws may limit the kind or amount of work that can be done by foreign workers. Buying property overseas can be a tricky prospect. As a foreigner, you may not be eligible for a mortgage. Some countries restrict foreigners' ability to own property or require permits and government permission before you can do so. If you can't buy a property, consider renting. Make a health care plan. Many U.S. seniors rely on Medicare to cover health care costs in retirement, but retirees living abroad have to make alternate plans, as the program typically doesn't cover overseas medical care. Retired people who aren't yet eligible for Medicare must do the same as well. That leaves expats with a few options. They can purchase supplemental insurance that will cover them in their new home. They can maintain a U.S. health plan and return to the U.S. for medical care. Or if they relocate to a country with a nationalized health care system and are eligible for treatment, they can get care that way. Be sure to thoroughly research the benefits and risks of the options in your new country before dropping coverage in the U.S. Whatever option you choose, you may also want to buy medical evacuation insurance to cover the significant cost of an emergency evacuation. Chances are you'll never need it, but you'll be very glad to have it if you do. Know your tax liabilities. Even if you're living outside the country full-time and plan to do so permanently, you still have to file a U.S. tax return if you're a U.S. citizen or a resident alien. According to federal law, Americans living abroad have the same obligation to file income, estate, and gift tax returns just as they would if they were still living domestically. When it comes to state tax, the process is more complicated. Every state has different residency criteria, although in many cases you can end your residency if you can prove that you live outside the state for more than 6 months a year. In addition, if you're still earning money in your previous home state, for example, if you're leasing your home and accruing rental income, you may owe state taxes on that income if it exceeds a certain threshold. And finally, you may be subject to taxes in your new country as well. The good news is that U.S. citizens who retire abroad can benefit from tax credits and deductions that may reduce their overall tax bill. The foreign earned income exclusion allows you to exclude a portion of the income you've earned in a foreign country from your taxes. You may also be able to take either a tax credit or a deduction for the amount you pay in foreign taxes on that income. Now we're going to an article from the Health Immunity magazine about decoding the cough. What is your immune system telling you when you start to hack? When to worry and when not to? This is by Amanda McMillan. Sure, you know that a dry cough is a symptom of COVID-19, but there are other causes of coughing too. In fact, it's the number one illness-related reason people go to the doctor, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Most cases of cough are temporary, said Peter Dikonaitis, MD, director of the Montefiore Cough Center and professor of clinical medicine at Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York City. But even a short-term cough can be a sign of a bigger health issue that needs to be addressed by a doctor. Here's how to narrow down the possible culprits. A cold virus. A cough you've had for 3 weeks or less is most likely due to the common cold. Unfortunately, this cough, mainly dry, with some clear mucus, can persist for a month or more after the rest of your symptoms are gone. The virus irritates nerve endings in your air passages, and they can stay sensitive for quite some time. Treat it. There's no cure for viral infections, so you'll have to wait this one out. If your barking is serious and over-the-counter cough suppressants don't provide relief, your doc may prescribe medicine to calm your cough reflex, says Gerald W. Frank, MD, clinical professor of medicine and pulmonary disease at UCLA. Over-the-counter decongestants or expectorants can also help thin out mucus so you can cough up more of it. Postnasal drip. If you've got a cough, wet or dry, that has lasted 8 weeks or longer, you could be suffering from chronic postnasal drip, mucus that accumulates in the sinuses and drips down the back of the throat, creating a tickling sensation that triggers a cough. There's no test for postnasal drip, says Dr. Frank, but you may also have a runny nose or congestion from allergies or lingering cold symptoms, for example. Other signs include frequent throat clearing and a sore throat. Because postnasal drip is such a common problem with patients, doctors often try treating it even if they're not sure of a diagnosis, said Dr. Frank. Treat it. A nasal saline rinse may help when it's used in accordance with the package directions of your doctor's instructions. Or your doctor may recommend steroids or antihistamines to reduce inflammation. Pay attention to the color of your mucus. Coughing up yellow or green mucus means your immune system has really kicked in, which could suggest a bacterial infection like sinusitis, said Dr. Frank. In that case, you'll need antibiotics. Asthma. Asthma usually shows up as wheezing and shortness of breath, but in people with cough variant asthma, a dry, persistent cough may be the only sign. It's often worse at night, during or shortly after exercise, when you're breathing cold air, or when you're around an allergen like pet dander or pollen. Treat it. Your doctor may give you breathing tests to diagnose asthma or recommend using an inhaler twice a day for a few weeks to see if your cough subsides. Antihistamines or allergy shots may also help. Acid reflux. Gastroesophageal reflux disease, or GERD, is linked to an estimated 25% of chronic cough cases. When acid flows back up into the esophagus, it can irritate nerve endings, triggering a persistent cough, but it can be hard to diagnose. Not everyone with GERD gets heartburn, said Dr. D. If you're coughing after a meal, when you lie down at night, or upon rising in the mornings, or if you have an intermittently hoarse voice along with the cough, these are hints it might be reflux. Most cases of GERD are relatively easy to remedy with antacid meds, but cough-related GERD can be more stubborn, and you'll need to get checked out by your physician. You might require larger doses of RX medicine, and it may take 6 to 8 weeks for you to feel better. Overweight? Slimming down sometimes helps with GERD. Try elevating the head of your bed when you sleep also. Pneumonia. Sometimes a cough may signal a more severe illness. Pneumonia can develop when a respiratory infection spreads to the lungs, causing the lungs' air sacs to fill with pus. This makes it hard to breathe and produces a wet, sometimes painful cough. Your condition can become life-threatening in a matter of days. If you are coughing up lots of green phlegm or blood, are short of breath, and or have chest discomfort, go to your doctor or an ER if you can't be seen right away. Fever and chills are other warning signs. Treat it. A chest X-ray is the only way to know for sure whether you have pneumonia, but some doctors will diagnose it by listening to your lungs with a stethoscope, said Dr. Frank. Most serious cases in adults are bacterial and treated with antibiotics. Whooping cough. This highly contagious disease is making a comeback, with more than 18,000 cases in the U.S. reported in 2015. The name comes from the whoop sound some people make as they gasp for breath after a long, intense fit of coughing. You can get whooping cough, also known as pertussis, even if you've been vaccinated. That's because the shot's protection weakens over time. Treat it. If you start antibiotics within 3 weeks of your infection, they may lessen your symptoms. They can also keep you from spreading the bacteria to other people, which is crucial because an infection can lead to serious illness, even death, in babies. Other causes. For coughs that don't respond to the treatments above, your doctor may order a chest x-ray or a CT scan of your lungs or sinuses. This can help rule out serious conditions like chronic obstructive pulmonary disease or lung cancer. If your hacking appears only at certain times or places, consider allergies or sensitivity to irritants like mold, pollution, or smoke. Think about your medications, too. Up to 20% of people who take ACE inhibitors for conditions such as high blood pressure develop a dry cough. Finally, some chronic coughs can be explained by what is sometimes called cough hypersensitivity syndrome. This means you may develop a cough as a result of triggers that don't cause coughing in most people. Women tend to have a more sensitive cough reflex than men, but in most cases, the culprit and the cure is there. You just need some trial and error to find it. So here's some home remedies that work. Need short-term relief while you're riding out a cold or the flu? Here are a few treatments that may be worth trying. Honey. Thick, sweet liquids, even without medication, can soothe and diminish cough. Cough drops. Menthol, which is found in many over-the-counter lozenges, creates a cooling sensation and has been shown to help suppress coughing when used as directed. Other coughs may coat your throat and alleviate soreness, but there's little evidence to suggest they prevent hacking any better than hard candy. Steamy showers. Taking a hot shower or inhaling steam from a bowl of hot water, be careful not to burn your face, may help loosen mucus and make it easier to cough up. Coffee. Caffeine is a bronchodilator, meaning it can help open airwaves, and has been studied, with inconclusive results, as a potential asthma remedy. But it should never take the place of an inhaler for someone who needs one, warns Dr. Frank. It may ease a cough, though. In one study, coughers got more relief from drinking a mixture of instant coffee and honey than mixtures containing a common expectorant or a steroid. And moving on down the calendar with women's events, October 31st, 1978, pregnancy discrimination is banned. Congress bars employers from firing women for becoming pregnant. And September 25th, 1981, order in the court, Sandra Day O'Connor is sworn in as the Supreme Court's first female justice. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, call 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.